eventually I was sure that it was going to escalate into violence, and oftentimes it did. Many times it did.
And when you say violence, what are you referring to specifically?
Miss Hurd, in her frustration and in her rage and her anger, she would strike out. She would, it could begin with a slap, it could begin with a shove, it could begin with, you know, throwing a TV remote at my head. It could be throwing a glass of wine in my face. All in all, it was a constant. There was a built-in list of as I said, my personal experiences, which I gave to Miss Hurd, those facts were used against me as weapons, especially when it came to my kids. There was no need for it. There was no need for it. Too many lines were crossed. You couldn't see the lines anymore.
You mentioned that Ms. Hurd would use information you gave her against you like a weapon. Can you explain that a little bit?
I've said this before in various interviews, but certainly in life. If I have one ambition, and ambition for me, when you equate it with Hollywood, has become an ugly word in a sense, because ambition means I want to be famous at any cost. I don't care what for, I just want to be famous. That's one thing, that's one part of it. If you have hunger or a need or a drive to present your work, that to me is the way to go about it. Fame has nothing to do with it. So I was more, basically, the only ambition that I've ever had in my life arrived the second that my first child arrived, and in the instant, which was to be a good parent, to be a great father, to be the best father I could. And there were several occasions where Miss Hurd would tell me what a bad father I was, and that I had no idea how to parent. And again, it falls into the same category as before. I couldn't understand how in 52 years or however old I was at the time, how I could be so wrong about everything. One learns along the road. The result of the road is not important. It's the road that's important, because we don't know exactly what's going to happen in 10 years. We don't know. So the road is what I pay attention to, and paying attention to trying to spend as much time with my children as possible. That could send Miss Hurd into a monumental tailspin, where I could hardly ever go and see my kids and spend time with my kids because she had to have me there at all times for her own needs.
So,
and that was something that once you realize that that's happening and then there are hassles between the children and her, the situation starts to get a little more grim and a little more dire. And that I was not prepared to take. I would not hear the words, "You're a bad father, you're a terrible father, you're an awful father." So one can only take so much of that before bits of your brain start to just, bits of your brain, bits of your heart begin to, the valve gets shut off because you can't hear it anymore. And you know that it's not true. And you know that it's meant as a whip. It's just to, it's to slice you up. It's to bring you down. It's to demean you. It's to bring you into a place where you start to believe that there's something wrong with you. And there's plenty wrong with me. There's plenty wrong with a lot of people. But in all of these situations, my main goal was to retreat, because I think in life, most important is pick your battles. If there's a battle to be fought that it's grave and important, then that must be dealt with. But small insults and kind of teenage sort of high school tactics, this bullying, if you will, was becoming too much to take.
So why did you stay with Ms. Hurd given this type of behavior?
That's a very complicated answer. I can only say that I stayed through all that. I'm sure that it's somehow related to my father remaining stoic as my mother would beat him to death. I'm sure it had a lot to do with having been in a beautiful, wonderful 14, 15-year relationship with Vanessa, the mother of my children. Raising those kids was, there was, I had no interest in being a, you know, the words that they use that I dislike very much, a celebrity or an entertainer, or fame is a strange word because I could never equate it with myself. I pumped gas, I worked construction, I printed t-shirts, I dug in, you know, I had many, many jobs before any of this happened to me. So I've been able to live both sides of that life, of life. I know the very lows, and I know the very highs of where my life has gone. And it would be pure idiocy for me to sit up here as an actor who's been very, very fortunate over the years. And I can only say it's luck, in a sense that someone hands you the ball in the beginning and you run with it and you run as far as you can before you get tackled. So that's what I've always done. But what happens is, the word, when the word celebrity or a public figure, that's what it is, a celebrity or a public figure, again, not complaining, but there are things that are very uncomfortable, and that is to say that at that point anybody can say anything they want to about you. And that's happened to me over 36 years or more, that things can be printed in the newspaper that are utterly false. This is even early on. So this is where that privilege, I suppose, that they call the privilege of celebrity, that's where that sticks a knife in you. Because it's one of those, that's one of those situations where your arms are too short to box with God, you know. There are too many of them coming at you. I don't know what her motivations were, if there was some species of jealousy, or there was some species of maybe just hatred. I don't know. But in any case, the elevation and the escalation of these day-to-day arguments were simply unnecessary. It was not to help the relationship. It did not help the relationship. It wasn't meant to help the relationship. It was meant to feed her need for conflict. She has a need for conflict. She has a need for violence. It erupts out of nowhere, and what I learned, the only thing I learned to do with it is exactly what I did as a child. Retreat. Just take a step back, which I told her, we need to remove ourselves from each other, even for an hour, a day, anything. Because this can't go on. No one can live like this, you know. But why did I stay? I stayed, I suppose, because my father stayed. I suppose because I had been in that relationship with Vanessa, and that was lost, and I didn't want to fail. I wanted to try to make it work. I thought maybe I could help her. I thought maybe I could bring her around, because the Amber Heard that I knew for the first year and a half was not suddenly this opponent. It wasn't my girl. It was she had become my opponent, and everything that I did just didn't fit her. She didn't accept it. So I stayed because, of course, I didn't want to fail. I didn't want to hurt anyone, especially Miss Heard. I didn't want to break her heart. I remember very well that when my father left and my mother, Betty Sue, had that first attempt at suicide that I woke up to, and that visual in my head, and that was a direct result of my father's leaving. Ms. Heard had spoken of suicide on a couple of occasions, so that also becomes a factor. That's also something that always lives in the back of your brain and that you fear. Because when I would leave sometimes, I mean, well, many times when I would try to leave, she would, you know, stop me at the elevator with the security guards crying, screaming, you know, I can't live without you. I'm gonna die. But you had to get out. There were even a couple of times when I did escape and I got to my house, arrived at my house in Switzer, and then 5 minutes later she would arrive in the I don't know what car she was driving at the time, but she would arrive in her nightgown, screaming in the parking lot in front of my house, screaming to high heavens, and it'd be 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning. It was ludicrous. It was out of control. It was uncontrollable.
Did there come a time when you and Ms. Heard started recording your arguments?
Yes. In fact, I was the first person of the two of us to record conversations. And it was for this reason. We would have been talking the night before or arguing the night before, and she would say something. There would be these demeaning, berating insults. There would be these jabs. There would be anything to make me feel small and like nothing. So what I thought was, I'm going to record the conversation. And I told her this. I'm going to record. I'm going to get my phone and I'm going to record our conversation, because I want you to hear what you've said to me tomorrow. So that you, because she would deny having said those things. What are you talking about? You know, it was surreal. She had completely denied things she'd said directly to my face in a heated and volatile way. And she denied it, so I went to her and I said, I'm going to record us. And I did, and we recorded the conversation, which when she was on tape, the first time it escalated a bit, but she was, well, it was clear that she was performing for the tape because it was being recorded. So that was another clue that something was slightly rotten in the state of Denmark, as it were.
What did Ms. Heard say to you about you recording the conversations between you and her?
I mean, initially she said, sure, go ahead.
Did that ever change?
No, then she started recording, but surreptitious, without telling me that she was recording something, which is fine, but not so fine, if you know what I mean. Even in those tapes, it never took me to a place where I would go switch into some other entity, which is, as she has used the term, monster. Never switched to violence. Violence was unnecessary. Why would you hit someone to make them agree with you? I don't think it works.
Mr. Depp, you mentioned the term monster, and I think we heard about that in the opening statements. What does the term monster mean to you?
Well, the term monster means to me, you know, in the beginning, she had used a different word to explain the same thing, and she would use the word demons, that my demons were coming out, or that she had noticed that there was a great change in my attitude or my aggressive nature, or she would say that the demons had come out and they had control of me and that sort of thing. I don't remember exactly how monster came out, but that word stuck and it stayed, well, until this day. What I believe the monster was in Ms. Heard's mind was her
his belief about what monster meant in Ms. Heard's mind is not relevant. There's no foundation.
Let me ask a different question.
All right, I'll sustain the objection. Go ahead.
When you used the term monster, what were you referring to in your conversations with Ms. Heard?
When I used the term monster with Ms. Heard, I was placating. If she had referred to me as being a monster, there was no way that I was going to sit there and go through a 45-minute argument about, you know, you're a monster. No, I'm not. You're a monster. No, I'm not. You're a monster. No, I'm not. It was an impossibility. So what do? You accept her vernacular. You accept what the word that she uses, and then you use that word to placate her so that it would at least calm part of the aggression. It would lessen the attacks, you know. So explaining the monster was for me she had told me many times that the monster was only me when I was using drugs and alcohol, but it even when I was stone cold sober off of alcohol substances aside from my meds, the term the monster was still there. When she accused me of being high on cocaine or you know, drinking like a, you know, some sort of like I was a, you know, some kind of 19th century sailor. That was the word she clung to describe. But it was in her mind, not mine.
How did your relationship with Ms. Heard affect your substance use?